Welcome to The Critique. Today we are looking at a white paper that argues our modern human systems perform the symbol of repair while completely ignoring the actual conditions of life. And we need to jump straight into the biggest structural hurdle holding this draft back, because integrating the artificial intelligence test case earlier in the conceptual architecture will prevent it from feeling like a disconnected appendix.
Yeah, I mean, that is absolutely the first place we need to start. Because when you read the first eight sections of this draft, it is a beautifully constructed, almost universally applicable philosophical argument.
Right, it really is.
You know, the author takes us through these incredibly deep explorations of living systems theory and prophetic spirituality. It's careful, it built immense momentum, but then you hit section 9, and suddenly you are reading a highly specific, highly technical discourse on AI governance.
Yeah, it feels like two completely separate essays, just, well, sort of stapled together at the last minute. The transition is incredibly jarring because artificial intelligence is barely even mentioned in those foundational early chapters.
Exactly. The shift breaks the immersion entirely. So, the weakness here is that the underlying mechanism the author describes across those first eight sections is symbolic substitution. But they save the ultimate example of it for the very end.
Right, like that great example they use about a hospital preserving the symbol of treatment by moving patients quickly through beds, right? All while neglecting the messy conditions of real human healing?
Yes, exactly. That's symbolic substitution. And the most effective suggestion to fix the structural rupture is to weave the concept of artificial intelligence throughout those earlier chapters as the ultimate unfolding manifestation of that symbolic substitution.
So instead of holding AI back as this surprise test case for the end, they should use it as the ongoing running example.
Precisely. By doing this, Section 9 will feel like an inevitable culmination of the theory rather than just a sudden detour. I mean, AI is the ultimate engine for scaling the exact systemic harms being discussed in Chapter 1.
Okay, so what does that look like practically? Like, give me a concrete example for the author.
Well, in Section 2, the paper contrasts the symbol versus the condition. It breaks down how measurable progress replaces actual life capacity. When the paper introduces this contrast, they should introduce the AI oracle right then and there.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is a perfect insertion point.
Right? Because think about how a large language model functions. It generates the perfect symbol of an answer. It sounds authoritative, it synthesizes text beautifully, but it lacks the lived accountability that true wisdom requires.
It has absolutely no skin in the game.
Exactly. It doesn't live with the consequences of its advice. It is pure symbol, zero condition.
And they could push that even further into Section 6, right? Where the paper discusses the inner algorithms of capture, like fear and desire amplification.
Yes, the author needs to explicitly foreshadow how machines are currently being trained to scale these exact human algorithms. The attention economy is the perfect bridge here, to show how an AI takes a fragile human algorithm and scales it for profit.
But wait, let me play devil's advocate for a second. It is like the author has built this gorgeous, timeless medieval cathedral out of deep sociological theory, and then you walk into the back room and find a Silicon Valley startup with ping pong tables and servers humming away.
Right. It feels a bit dissonant.
Yeah. Is there a risk that focusing so heavily on AI at the very beginning might date the paper? I mean, technology moves so incredibly fast. Won't the whole cathedral feel obsolete in 24 months?
Well, that is the exact risk you run if you treat AI merely as a software product. But the way to mitigate that risk is to focus purely on the nature of the technology as a human mirror.
Okay. I see where you're going.
Yeah. If we weave AI in early as the externalization of human misattunement, it actually fortifies the timelessness of the theory. It proves that whether we are talking about the physical enclosure of land in the 17th century or the enclosure of language by machine learning today, the underlying pathology is exactly the same.
That makes total sense. Once that theoretical fabric is woven together tightly, though, it has to survive contact with reality. Grounding the seven-step repair framework in a singular, detailed, historical, or institutional case study will transform it from an abstract ideal into a rigorous diagnostic tool.
This is such a crucial pivot for the manuscript's completeness and focus. because right now the weakness is that the text relies very heavily on abstract triads and these rapid-fire hypothetical examples.
Right, we get a fleeting sentence like, a hospital may apologize, or a school may count attendance.
Yeah, and they pass by so quickly. They illustrate performative care well enough, but they just don't carry any weight.
They really don't. They don't prove that the paper's central offering, which is this 7-step life-coherent repair framework, can actually dismantle a complex, entrenched system of structural harm.
Exactly. The steps themselves, moving from seeing the wound to making the repair real, they sound incredibly beautiful in isolation. But without gravity, they risk floating away into the ether as pure theoretical posturing.
So to fix this floating abstraction, the suggestion is to select one continuous, thoroughly researched case study to anchor Section 8. The author needs to walk the reader through exactly how these 7 steps apply to a real, messy, institutional failure.
We need to see the surgical tools actually being used in the operating room. So let's brainstorm a concrete example of what that could look like.
Okay, yeah, let's walk through it.
The author could apply the entire framework to a specific historical ecological enclosure, like a localized water privatization crisis in a municipality. Imagine spending 4 or 5 pages just on this one town.
All right, so what does step 3, naming the false order, actually look like in a town where a corporation has bought the aquifer?
Well, it means moving past the PR language. It means challenging a corporate narrative that labels water extraction as economic investment and factually naming it as the structural depletion of a community's life source.
Okay, and what about step 4, identifying the missing condition?
In the water crisis, the missing condition isn't just more water. It's unfinancialized access to clean drinking water without the burden of generational debt. And then, crucially, you get to step 7, the minimal sufficient intervention.
Right, which is where a lot of theoretical papers just fall apart. They suggest tearing down the entire global capitalist system as the only solution, which, you know, isn't really actionable for a local town council.
Exactly. The minimal sufficient intervention in this case study wouldn't be building a massive new corporate pipeline. It might just be legally voiding the privatization contract and restoring the original community-managed well system.
Walking the reader through that messy, incremental reality proves the framework functions under pressure. But let me push back on you here. If the framework is as universal as it claims, shouldn't it be able to stand on its theoretical merits without a specific case study?
I mean, that is the ultimate ironic trap for a paper like this. Think about the core argument here. The paper vehemently warns against human systems that speak the language of care but refuse to do the embodied work of repair.
Oh, I see. So if the white paper itself refuses to embody its framework in reality,
it falls victim to its own critique. If it only speaks elegantly of a repair framework, it just becomes an exercise in symbolic performance itself. Furthermore, practically speaking, you have to consider the audience.
Right, the readers are empiricists.
Exactly. The intended readers of a white paper on governance and economics think in case studies. Providing a sustained, gritty case study doesn't weaken the universality of the theory, it validates it for them.
It proves the theoretical cathedral actually keeps the rain out. But, you know, even if the author successfully grounds this in a messy reality like a water crisis, they run into a completely different wall with the language itself. Recalibrating the language of prophetic spirituality to explicitly map onto cybernetic and systems theory concepts will fortify the paper's credibility with institutional and academic audiences.
Yes. This is perhaps the most delicate editorial pivot required in the entire manuscript. The weakness here is that concepts central to the paper, like the tears of life and prophetic repair, carry extremely heavy theological and spiritual connotations.
Right. They are undeniably beautiful phrases, but in an academic white paper aimed at secular governance, this vocabulary runs a severe risk of alienation. It risks sounding overly sentimental.
Exactly. Secular readers or those rooted strictly in policy analysis might hit a phrase like prophetic naming and completely bounce off the text. They might just dismiss it as religious poetry.
And they'd completely miss the rigorous systems theory that actually underpins the concept.
Right. They won't realize the author is drawing from deep structural models to make these claims. So the suggestion here is to explicitly define these spiritual terms as functional mechanisms within systems theory.
The text has to forcefully demonstrate that tears and prophecy are not just emotional states. They are vital, indispensable systemic data points. Let's give the listener a concrete example of how to build that bridge in the text.
Okay, let's look at the tears of life, which is introduced in section 5. The author shouldn't just present tears as sadness. They need to explicitly define tears as the critical restoration of a blocked cybernetic feedback loop in a structurally coupled system.
Let's break that down just a bit so we aren't swapping one set of jargon for another. How does a tear act as a feedback loop?
Well, if we look at systems theory, a massive government bureaucracy acts as a closed system. It creates a shield of surrogate metrics like attendance records or quarterly profits to insulate itself from the chaotic environment outside.
But a perfectly closed system will eventually destroy its environment and then itself because it cannot process external pain signals.
Exactly. It's like a thermostat that has had its temperature sensor disconnected. The furnace just keeps running until the house burns down.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
So in that context, what are the tears of life?
Tears are the raw, unmediated environmental data finally breaking through the bureaucracy's defensive metric shield. They are the rising dropout rates, the localized water shortages, the burnout of the nursing staff.
They are the temperature sensor kicking back online to warn the system it is overheating.
And we can apply that exact same translation to the prophetic steps later in the paper.
Right. Don't just frame prophetic naming as an ancient tradition. Frame it as the necessary systemic correction of misattunement. It is the exact moment a system is forced to stop optimizing for its surrogate metric and reconnect with material reality.
If you tell a corporate board they need to engage in prophetic grief, they are going to politely tune you out. But if you tell them they are operating a closed-loop system suffering from metric capture and that prophetic naming is the only mechanism to reestablish environmental attunement before total collapse, well, they will listen.
Exactly. It makes the text bilingual. You bypass their institutional allergy to sentimentality by forcing them to deal with the cold, hard logic of their own self-destruction.
But doesn't stripping away the poetry leave us with the cold, mechanistic worldview the paper is actively trying to dismantle? Aren't we just doing another kind of symbolic substitution if we reduce human grief to a cybernetic data point?
That is the profound philosophical tightrope the author is walking here. And it's a completely valid fear. But recalibrating the language doesn't mean deleting the poetry. It means anchoring it.
So the goal isn't replacement?
No, the goal is synthesis. The goal is to insist academically and rigorously that tears are the most important data. By holding the spiritual and the cybernetic in the exact same sentence, the author forces the reader into a realization.
That systems theory without human grief is blind, and human grief without systems theory is powerless to change institutions.
Precisely. If the author can demonstrate that a system incapable of grief is a failing system from a purely structural standpoint, they will have smuggled a profoundly moral argument into the very citadel of modern institutional logic.
That is incredibly powerful. All right, to recap this critique, we have three core actionable areas for improvement. First, weave the AI test case throughout the foundational chapters to improve structural flow.
Right. Explicitly moving examples of the AI oracle and the attention economy into sections 2 and 6.
Exactly. Second, anchor the 7-step framework in a sustained real-world case study.
Like drafting a detailed historical application of a local water privatization crisis for Section 8 to prove its practical efficacy.
And finally, explicitly bridge the spiritual terminology with cybernetic feedback loops to ensure academic resonance. Show those secular policymakers that prophetic grief is a critical mechanism necessary for system survival.
If the author can implement these structural and tonal calibrations, the underlying framework here is definitely strong enough to fundamentally change how institutions view their own mechanisms of harm.
We highly encourage the listener to implement these suggestions. Please submit the revised white paper back to the critique for another round of feedback. We would love to see how this evolves and continues to stress test the steel of our human systems.